I want to thank the Sharfman family for the trust you've placed in Hadar Institute to honor Dr. Eddie Sharfman in this very special way each year. And I'm particularly grateful for this opportunity to share words of Torah and reflection as we honor his legacy in this new physical space for the first time. This evening, I aim to offer a Jewish perspective on artificial intelligence, particularly through the lens of defining the Hebrew word da'at, which can mean intelligence, mind, knowledge. And my main purpose is to make sure that we understand and appreciate the dimensions and power of our unique human intelligence as we are trying to figure out how to navigate an ever-growing complex world of artificial intelligence. And it feels particularly relevant to hold with us the memory of Dr. Eddie Sharfman, a psychiatrist who devoted his life's work to the human mind and mental health. May his memory be a blessing, and may we carry forward this blessing in part through our shared attention to the complexity of the human mind in our time together this evening. Artificial intelligence is leaping into our lives more and more these days in ways we can control and ways that we can't. In ways we are aware of and ways we are not aware of. Some of us are enthusiastic, some scared, some of us are curious but skeptical, but we are all affected by AI, even as none of us fully understand it, not even the scientists at the forefront of the newest generative AI. I speak this evening from a place of humility. I don't pretend to have any technological expertise, and I am grateful for those who are more expert than I, who are thinking through how to function with AI and how to apply Jewish law in terms of AI from a practical perspective. Yet I do feel a sense of urgency to pause and reflect on AI as a student and teacher of Torah. Right now, AI is being driven forward by the high-risk, high-profit tech world, deploying unimaginably vast sums of money and energy resources, soon to be under a government that will pride itself on deregulation in this country. It's not clear what constraints there are, if any, on how this technology will evolve and how it will become embedded in our lives. Optimists hope for utopian outcomes, like the end of the need for all human labor. Pessimists predict dystopian robotic takeovers. And in a moment when people are feeling both fascinated but also disoriented by the current and imagined capabilities of AI, my goal is to refocus our attention to the meaning and power of intelligence, particularly human intelligence. Bumping up against AI presents us with a critical moment to clarify how we think, how we think affects who we are, and why this matters. I will take us on a journey to explore what Torah teaches about the texture of da'at, our intelligence or our mind, and how the texture of our da'at differs or overlaps with the kind of intelligence we are seeing in AI. We will carefully consider different models for understanding the relationship between our own intelligence and the intelligence of AI, and the ethical imperatives wrapped up in these models from a Torah perspective. I hope we will come away feeling a renewed sense of appreciation and awe for our own humanity, even as we are brutally honest about our limitation. And with this honest and sobering perspective, I hope we will feel more ready to embrace the power of our non-artificial intelligence to navigate the opportunities and complexities of this moment from a sense of clarity and purpose. As artificial intelligence become more capable of producing human-like output, we need clarity about the ways our own human minds work and why that matters. Why are we turning to AI in the first place? I found it helpful to draw on the work of Dr. Gary Marcus as an expert in both artificial intelligence and the development and function of the human mind, and a professor who's testified in Congress in recent years about AI policy. He brings much perspective to this moment of opportunity, mess, and risk. Over the past two decades, Dr. Marcus has focused on intelligence. Number one, he says, the human mind is a kludge, a suboptimal hodgepodge born of adaptive evolutionary development that is not perfect or ideal for many of the tasks we want it to do, but is incredible for contextual and adaptive reasoning and thinking. Artificial intelligence is not yet, and this is insight number two, artificial intelligence is not yet even as intelligent as the human mind, because the technology has focused on large language models and big data and neglected reasoning and adaptive robustness, prominent features of the human mind. We are turning to AI because we are keenly aware of the limits of our own minds, yet there are severe limitations in AI as well. Before becoming entranced by the novelty of AI, we should ask ourselves, what is the unique texture of human intelligence, or da'at in Hebrew? Do we have a definition of da'at that is expansive enough to include the broad array of humanity and at the same time focused enough to not be trivial? So we'll start by tracing the origins of our intelligence, our da'at. In the Bible, it usually refers to divine knowledge or God-given knowledge or humanity striving to know God. For Maimonides, this is the first source on your source sheet if you're following along. For Maimonides, our intelligence is the core of what it means to be created in the image of God. Human intelligence should thus be understood against the backdrop of divine intelligence, even as they are certainly not identical. Our participation in godly intelligence is not an uncomplicated story, as we see from humanity's transgressive access to the tree of knowledge, Eitz Hada'at. Scholars have debated for centuries what kind of knowledge we gained when we ate from that tree. But one thing is clear. It was not about access to vast amounts of information or big data. The origins of da'at have to do with discernment, knowledge between good and evil, perhaps moral judgment. At the very beginning of each week, the moment Shabbat ends and we prepare for the first day of our new week of creative labor, we relive this moment of creation and reinscribe the notion that our intelligence is God's gift when we pray to, quote, God who graciously gives da'at, intelligence. We know that this capacity for knowledge holds great power and great risk, and we ask for God's ongoing guidance to deploy our intelligence towards finding peace and avoiding sin. So human non-artificial intelligence is not about accruing information. At its core, da'at is about knowing God. But what does it mean for humanity to participate in divine intelligence? We often think of God as omniscient, knowing and remembering everything perfectly. Indeed, this seems what some hope AI systems will approach. But human intelligence is not at all about perfect knowledge of facts or having an infallible memory. Let's juxtapose Maimonides' vision of our godlike intelligence with an evolutionary perspective. I gave you a brief quote from Gary Marcus. He says, living creatures' continuous need to survive and reproduce often precludes evolution from building genuinely optimal systems. The consequences are often equally clumsy, with new technologies piled on top of old. Banter, over the course of evolution, our brain has become a bit like a palimpsest, an ancient manuscript with layers of text written over it many times, old bits still hiding behind new. The end product tends to be a kludge. And he says, memory, the mother of all kludges, the single factor most responsible for human cognitive idiosyncrasy. Our memory is both spectacular and a constant source of disappointment. Computer memory works well because programmers organize information into what amounts to a giant map. When a computer is prompted to retrieve a particular memory, it simply goes to the relevant address. We wound up with what I'll call contextual memory, rooted in the parts of our brain that were geared towards basic survival. What does contextual memory mean? We cannot access a fact in a standardized, objective way because our brains are highly influenced by our present context. For example, once we're in the store, we always forget the thing we knew we desperately needed when we were standing in the kitchen. Instead of being perfect, our intelligence is responsive and adaptive, always on the lookout for opportunities or risks in our current dynamic environment, ready to change priorities in a split second accordingly, and most able to access the knowledge that intuitively feels relevant in the moment to maximize benefit and minimize danger. So if our participation in divine intelligence is not about perfection, what is it about? Much of our tradition stresses that we should all be like a god by practicing compassion, that God gave us intelligence, da'at, to express compassion towards each other. Or elsewhere, we see that to know God is to manifest morality and justice, especially towards the most vulnerable in our society. As we are bombarded by artificial intelligence, that assumes intelligence is about vast stores of information, we must not be confused about what da'at really is. Our pursuit of intelligence must always be laser focused on what can manifest divine intelligence, more compassion and justice in our world. Anything else cannot properly be called intelligence or da'at. AI is not merely disembodied intelligence, it is not fully intelligent intelligence. Let's turn to the messy and exciting realm of human intelligence in its various dimensions, the texture of human intelligence. The notion of each person's individual da'at takes on great significance when we move from biblical sources to rabbinic tradition, Torah Sheba Alpeh. In recent decades, a number of scholars have explored the importance of individual human will and intention across various areas of Jewish practice. According to some, individual subjectivity and will is a or even the central feature in the Mishnah, parallel to the development of the self in late antiquity more broadly. Our sages articulate a robust vision of Torah and mitzvot centered upon the responsibilities of individual actors who must deliberately deploy their da'at, their mind, in relationship with God and others, guided by the educational project of Talmud Torah. Is humanity defined by da'at? Da'at is a feature of the fully accountable legal subject with the capacity to consent or withhold consent. Necessary characteristic to be defined as human. In the Mishnah's terminology, a person who is both deaf and mute in a world without any kind of communication, an imbecile or minors, you can see this in the Mishnah text, do not have da'at. They do not have what is called legal da'at. They are not held legally accountable for things like breaking the Sabbath or causing property damage. But any act of violence toward them is considered a crime against a person with legal consequences. So, da'at is necessary for establishing legal accountability, but it is unnecessary for the protections of personhood. And I would suggest that its lack of necessity for personhood means it is essentially irrelevant. And therefore, a disembodied intelligence, which I'm not even sure AI qualifies as, this kind of intelligence is insufficient to establish personhood. Current rabbinic scholars are surfacing a lot of subtleties in how to think about personhood, drawing on complex teachings about marginal and liminal beings, including fetuses and angels and demons. But my point is, now that we are clear that da'at is not the criterion for personhood, but for accountability, now we can turn to what exactly our da'at is, the nature of this human intelligence. In the hundreds of examples of da'at in Tana'itic sources, it basically never refers to knowledge of a vast quantity of information. Having surveyed much of this material, I will share some of the more prominent meanings da'at has. In legal texts, an individual's da'at represents their legally significant will. From an interpersonal perspective, a person's da'at must be respected and not violated. In many cases, we might translate that as consent. Two neighbors must consent to parameters of a building project. Two parties must consent to a wedding contract. or a labor agreement. Again, this is not about knowing vast quantities of data. Violence can occur not only against a person's body, but also against their da'at, their legally recognized selfhood. We'll take a look at a passage that discusses violation of da'at in relation to rape, which you have here in your source sheet in source number 5. This source deals with the difference between seduction and rape. And if you look at the towards the end of it, it says, perhaps a person pays a fine in the case of rape because he has violated a young maiden's consent and her father's consent. Sha'avar al-da'ata ve'al-da'at aviha. At first, this text sees seduction and rape as essentially similar. There are violations of the father's authority over her daughter, emerge rooted in a notion of individual legal subjects that takes into account the young woman's da'at, her legally significant individual mind or self. Rape is more severe than seduction because it is a violation of her consent. This description, which we might take for granted, is a highly significant moment in the significance of human da'at as an inviolable, legally protected will. As beings with da'at, our main aims should be to express our da'at and respect the da'at of others. And generative artificial intelligence that nonetheless lacks any sense of self and will and lacks any awareness and respect for others' will exists outside this critical dimension of da'at. It is not clear that the word intelligence should even apply when a bot, which has no da'at in this fundamental sense, can spew lies or racist comments about others, which is clearly a violation of their real da'at, we have a major problem. Beyond this very basic notion of human da'at as an inviolable individual will, many rabbinic laws deal with intention, both in ritual and in criminal areas. While in theory an AI could perform each step of a sacrifice correctly, it would be an improper sacrifice without the human intention that is actually the core element of what it means to bring a sacrifice. God wants our intention. Intent is also critical for establishing culpability in interpersonal transgressions. So we've seen will, we see here intention. Da'at as our consent, will, and intent all point to this very basic aspect of human non-artificial intelligence, which is individuality. The source that speaks to this is when Moshe nears his death, he does not download himself into an AI to continue being the leader of the Jewish people. He turns to God, who knows the individual nature of each person, to appoint the next leader who will be appropriate for this particular task. And look at source 6 here because it's kind of amazing. I'm going to share a chat GPT translation error. Here's the text, right? He says, turns to God who knows the mind and spirit of every individual, who is haughty and who is humble, who is reliable and who is impetuous. We are each born with a brain, DNA, personality that is unique. Our individual minds and our thinking are constantly shaped by the particular subset of experiences we have. But not only does artificial intelligence not have this feature, it does not understand this concept. A ChatGPT translation for this text could not figure out that the kind of intelligence mentioned here is about human nature, and it translated the word himanit, reliable, which happened to be missing the last letter in the Hebrew text, as the right side, which is totally wrong. AI can be deployed as a tool that assists each of us to express our unique will, but it cannot do what a thinking individual does. It doesn't have an individual personality. It cannot reason. It could not figure out that this text was about human individual personality and translated it wrong. Okay, so da'at is not about producing output through access to big data. It is about how we think. I want to get into now rabbinic sources that speak to how we think. Many early rabbinic texts that refer to da'at relate to the process of thinking, especially through deductive reasoning, common sense, and presumed values. Human reasoning, when I say that it's core to learning, it does not necessarily entail sophistication. It emerges already in young children, as Gary Marcus describes in much of his writing. Let's take the Manishtana as an example. Now we treat it as memorized data, but its origins actually demonstrate that learning is rooted in noticing and wondering, to take terms that are the bedrock of Hadar's pedagogy of partnership work. Children are constantly engaged in analogical thinking, trying to organize the world around them based on what is similar and different, so they know what to expect. The Mishnah assumes that children at the Seder will notice what stands out and remark about it. Bikan haben shoel aviv, says the Mishnah. They'll start to ask questions. Only if they are not automatically demonstrating this kind of da'at, deductive reasoning, does a parent go ahead and point out discrepancies. V'im ein da'at b'ven, aviv milamdo. And the Mishnah gives four examples of discrepancies which have come to be known as the Manishtana. But Manishtana is not a memorization exercise. Da'at here is the capacity to do deductive, analogical thinking based on what the child sees and what the child does not see. No matter how much data you feed a neural network, it cannot understand the significance of data that is not there. So our capacity for inference and implicit knowledge is at the cornerstone of learning Torah. In many early rabbinic texts, we find the phrase, V'chi ta'ale al da'atcha, would it ever arise in your mind? Would you ever think X? A person's assumed implicit knowledge or values are taken for granted in these texts. They are necessary for accessing what Torah is trying to teach us. Assuming that we already have prior knowledge, the text of the Torah then must be coming to teach us something else that will take our learning further. Human deductive reasoning is part of the Torah's unfolding. Torah is not taught by downloading a code, nor by memorizing large data sets. Torah evolves through interplay with active human thinking in the process of learning, and this process affects the outcome of learning. We should be cautious about trusting artificial so-called intelligence that does not even possess the common sense of young children. AI, even generative AI, does not yet actually think and reason independently. It approximates the product of thinking based on patterns in large statistical models. It doesn't comprehend abstraction and analogy. It doesn't grasp object relations. The imitations are getting better, and there are specific fixes to align artificial output so it will be more like human output. For example, problem of something like a figure suddenly disappearing in an AI-generated movie. But fixing appearances is not the same as the ability to actually reason. You cannot program every rule of common sense into AI. And what some critics of AI are most concerned about is not only that AI makes many errors, but that since the output is not based on a clear thinking process, nobody can understand what leads to these errors and hallucinations to effectively make improvements. AI already does, and I'm sure will continue to offer more expansive access points to much of the canon of Torah. It might even rebalance the oral Torah to swing it back more towards an oral interactive mode. But we should be keenly aware and wary of the limitations of this learning. It is simply unimaginable for learning Torah to happen through entities that do not have capacity for reasoning and inference. Whatever machines can do with their approximations based on data, it is not human reasoning. If we fail to fully understand and account for the specific kinds of learning machines can and can't do, we risk derailment of the process of Talmud Torah and what it's meant to be, and this will also affect the ongoing outcomes of what Torah can become. That's on how we learn. I want to turn specifically to learning language, the heart of the matter. When we turn towards using AI, not just for synthetic access to data, but for interactive language and learning, we must account for the complexity of communication and how much data involved is different from the words explicitly spoken. There's tone, contextual inferences, and common sense. Rabbinic sources discuss unspoken words, devarim shebelev, in human interactions and transactions. When commenting on a land sale where the seller didn't explicitly articulate a condition they had in mind, the Amoraic sage Rava asserts, words of the heart are not words. If you didn't turn your thoughts into explicit data the other person could receive, they have no legal significance. Yet, Rav Nissim of Girona, Rabbeinu Nissim, pushes back on this assertion in the medieval period and points out there are many cases in which unspoken words actually do carry a faraway trip, mistakenly thinks their child has died, writes off all their property to someone else. When the father returns and learns of the mistake, should the son be left with nothing? Obviously not. Rabbeinu Nissim says, where the matter is obvious in itself, these are not words of the heart, but words in the mouth and heart of the entire world. This is source 10. The knowledge we draw upon in language includes not only your own intelligence, but participating in and drawing upon a shared human intelligence, the heart or mind of the entire world. Now, maybe our optimists would say that big data could become this, the mind and heart of the entire world. But you can't really program this kind of common sense. The whole point of human intelligence is that we are adaptive and responsive, so we are able to make inferences from context and quickly understand the stakes of these inferences. AI does not have this capacity for contextual aspects of language learning. I'm sure we can all think of a million examples, but here's a really instructive one discussed in the book, Rebooting AI. An auto-prompted text message, happy birthday, dead Theo, instead of happy birthday, dear Theo. Clearly a typo. But our non-artificial contextual minds, especially attuned to survival and friend-foe instincts, would never make an error like this, unless maybe it's a Freudian slip for someone we particularly hate. How does this happen in AI? First, AI doesn't understand that birthday means you are celebrating another year of life. So of course, Theo is alive, not dead. Second, AI doesn't understand that the point of articulating these four words is for the recipient to appreciate the sentiment behind the words, davar hamasur lalev, to share good wishes, not offer a death threat. The production of these words on their own means nothing. Language is meant to externalize our inner da'at, our inner will, desire, intention, all things that AI simply does not have. I hope this map of how our earliest Torah sages approached da'at can serve as an orienting compass as we navigate uncharted territory of artificial intelligence. It's clear that AI is not equivalent to human intelligence, no matter how many Turing tests it can pass in narrow, confined parameters. It simply does not have independent reasoning, common sense, or adaptive and responsive thinking. The stakes are very high. I was recently driving on my own to Toronto with two kids in the back seat. It was nighttime. There was not great weather. I had my GPS navigation system on and was listening to an Audible book about AI. It was just getting into how self-driving cars don't do well in bad weather when I realized the navigation system was leading me to the state route instead of the larger highway. And as I went through the hills, it became foggy. There's light snowfall. I immediately became more alert, drawing on all the cues and subtleties that my father had taught me about night driving and high beams and fog, looking for any indication of oncoming vehicle to turn your brights off right away. The navigation system didn't know to avoid state routes in bad weather, and a self-driving car would not have been able to adapt to the weather conditions. The human mind and our capacity towards contextual cues, subtleties, reasoning, all embedded in survival instincts, is truly amazing. And if we land on the wrong relationship between human intelligence and artificial intelligence, the results can be disastrous and deadly. I don't think I would have survived to give this talk if I was in a self-driving car that night. So how should we understand the way our own da'at, our human intelligence, interfaces with ever-expanding artificial intelligence? I'll entertain three models and really suggest a fourth. Some language around AI makes it feel God-like. AI has the capacity to know everything. And maybe it could pair human understanding with massive memory. Slowly, it will control more and more of our lives, and ultimately, maybe even the world. These conceptions of AI are misguided and dangerous and speak to what critics call the gullibility problem, that AI can trick us into thinking that it knows more than it knows. AI is not a god. If anything, it has the danger of playing the role of idols. To read the description of idols in Psalms, their idols are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths but cannot speak, eyes but cannot see. They have ears but cannot hear. Here, idolatry is about pouring massive amounts of money into something we think has a power that it does not have. For AI, we have to slightly modify the language. It speaks but has no mouth. It hears but has no ears. But it's a similar problem. AI is commanding enormous sums of money and resources and can imitate appearances of human intelligence it does not actually have. This may be to minimal detriment when it's deployed towards something like ad recommendations. But as we rely on it for things like health, mental health counseling, or driving, assuming it has certain kinds of intelligence it does not actually possess, there are dangerous resonances of idolatry. In recent teaching and writing, Dr. David Zvi Kalman has critiqued the God analogy and instead suggested that AI might be thought of more as something like our children. Says we should treat AI as a kind of child, one that is growing in power and resembles its parents, but mimics them to a fault. This idea sets forth a path that emphasizes our long-term duty of care. So the child pathway fully acknowledges that the intelligence AI has is imperfect and immature, as opposed to the God pathway. But he draws on the work of Dr. Mary Benjamin in her book, The Obligated Self, where she construes Jewish law's essential posture of obligation through the lens of a parent's obligation toward their children. This carves out an ethical pathway that would ensure technologists and perhaps even users take full responsibility for these not fully intelligent or responsible human creations. However, as we've seen from the perspective of those who study development of children's brains and thinking, this model also feels like it has its dangers. AI does not actually possess the reasoning and common sense even the youngest children have when they're learning about object permanence, when they play peekaboo. They're learning about object relations and gravity when they throw food off their high chairs. And children are capable of so much learning that large language models cannot account for. And there could be a gullibility factor if we name AI as children and are not cautiously aware of the fact that AI intelligence is not merely immature human intelligence, it lacks some of the most fundamental hardwiring of human thinking altogether. Another major concern with the children model is more of a feminist and class critique. There are actually so many human children who have intelligence that no one is investing in. These biological children are less in our control, and investing in their non-artificial intelligence requires many kinds of demanding care, including sustenance, shelter, emotional support. But if so much money and resources can be thrown into exploring the potential of artificial intelligence that does not even have the intelligence of small children, why shouldn't some similar investment be made in exploring the potential of each individual human mind and all of the adaptiveness and creativity so many neglected children possess? Perhaps a more apt model for AI is to view it as our slaves. Essentially, we would recognize that AI contains some level of inferior intelligence and subjugate its intelligence to our own. This may be apt, but as heirs of a religious tradition that has a liberation theology and freeing slaves as our origin story, it feels very dangerous to enshrine slavery into our daily lives. I think of this anytime I or my child yells at Alexa, treating its intelligence as subject to our beck and call. Treating AI as slaves dangerously ingrains in us a posture of domination and even abuse towards others' intelligence. It seems to me that a helpful model for how our intelligence relates to artificial intelligence is the model of shlichut, designating AI as a proxy or an agent to perform specific tasks, but ultimately acting upon our own da'at. The goal would be to unleash the power of machine intelligence and human intelligence, not by making AI more independent, but by improving human-machine interface so that AI can serve as a maximally effective agent, unambiguously governed by human da'at, human intelligence. This model continues to elevate human intelligence for decision-making with our adaptiveness, our robustness, our common sense, our ability to contextually adjust priorities while deploying machine intelligence for its utility. Shlichut is a careful, deliberate model. In Jewish law, an agent, a shaliach, must be appropriate for a given task. They have no authority to act outside that task. Approaching AI through the lens of shlichut, a proxy, requires clear awareness of the potential of machine intelligence, an ability to acquire, to synthesize, manipulate massive amounts of data, as well as clear awareness of the limits of machine intelligence, particularly the lack of reasoning, adaptability, and values judgment. AI, as a proxy, as a shaliach, cannot be given a task it does not have intelligence to perform. So the model of AI's proxy, as a shaliach, would require us to be extremely clear about the stakes of a given task, what kind of adaptiveness it might require, and what kind of trust that entails. One of the earliest sources that establishes the possibility of a proxy in Jewish law is about the Passover sacrifice in Egypt, which any one person could slaughter for their assembled group. Shlucho shel Adam kmoto, a person's proxy is like themselves. This may seem obscure, but it's extremely significant. This was the first commandment the people of Israel ever received. It was their first moment of acting as a collective community with shared expectations and responsibilities. We have to understand that the role of a proxy is not about someone performing an isolated task. It only grows out of this context of shared commitments and trust. Only then may someone act on behalf of another. An AI might not pass that bar. Furthermore, even a specific task might seem simple, but actually require reasoning. When the Mishnah discusses appointing a proxy to give the required gift from one's produce to the Kohen, we see that this actually requires reasoning because different amounts can be given. One who says to their agent, go and give the priestly gift, they should give according to the intent of the homeowner. This is not an automatic task of removing an amount of grain. The proxy needs to be able to infer the emissary's intent, or the emissary needs to be extremely specific. We also see that if the proxy tried to approximate their emissary's wishes but made a trivial error, that's fine. But if they intentionally added even the tiniest amount from their own will, it is all invalid because they have no authority to act on their own will. Another constraint on the role of a proxy, AI as our shaliach, is that a proxy's actions are only valid to the extent that they act to the emissary's benefit. They are not authorized to act to the detriment of their emissary. This stipulation assumes that the emissary cannot dictate every single instruction to their proxy, accounting for every unpredictable outcome. The proxy might have to do some reasoning on their own and be able to discern what is to the benefit and what is to the detriment of their emissary. Furthermore, the proxy is held accountable if they actually commit a transgression. Ein shaliach, the devar avera. They are supposed to know if the instructions they receive should be overridden by a greater value. Can AI do all of this kind of reasoning? Unlikely. Perhaps the most promising element of the laws of proxies is a framework first articulated by a medieval scholar, Rabbeinu Asher, to isolate a subcomponent of a task that was well-defined and low trust, still relying on fully intelligent individuals with shared commitments for any significant or complex actions and decisions. This subcomponent of a task could be assigned to a proxy who would otherwise be disqualified. The language in its original context sounds offensive, but feels more fitting in the AI context. Rabbeinu Asher asserts that if a husband appoints a full proxy in whatever destination to deliver a divorce to the wife, A Gentile may be the one to do the work of transporting the document to that proxy. And he explains that this is permitted because the action of physically transporting the document, but not delivering it into the hands of the wife, is essentially insignificant. It's the kind of thing a monkey could do, ma'aseh kof. The comparison of a Gentile to a monkey is certainly offensive, but applied to AI, this reasoning actually feels more fitting. Can we clearly identify the narrow, low-trust tasks that AI can effectively accomplish within the limits of the intelligence it has? This model of shlichut or pratzi puts AI in a more complementary or helper role rather than an independent role. Indeed, most predictions of AI's growing role in the workplace assume it will supplement rather than entirely replace human labor. The limitations on a proxy with this model of shlichut help ensure we are asking the right question before relying on AI and fully acknowledging the critical role of human intelligence in reasoning, adaptiveness, robustness, and trust. The last problem I want to address as we create a compass for orienting the relationship between our human intelligence and artificial intelligence is known as the alignment problem. How can we ensure that AI does what we want it to do and doesn't derail itself and achieve outcomes that go against our da'at, our will or consent and values? Technologists are trying to figure out how to encode values in AI to increase trust and reliability. Concerns about whether an independent creation will align with its creator are not new. This is a central concern throughout Torah. With our God-given gift of intelligence, our earliest sages explicitly call for us as humans to align our mind and will with God's mind and will. And we know this is extremely difficult. Our sages describe revelation at Sinai as the one fleeting moment when we were able to achieve this alignment between human and divine. Higisu da'atan v'hishvu elyonim l'tachtonim. But in the real world, alignment between our intelligence and God's intelligence is a lifelong learning project. That is what learning Torah is all about. A midrash teaches, the sayings of the wise are like goads. Just as this goad directs the cow to its furrow to bring sustenance to its masters, so too, words of Torah align a person's intellect with the divine intellect. We have returned to our starting place. Our human intelligence is a gift from God. We're meant to participate in divine intelligence, but training our intelligence to act out our values is no simple thing. It is an alignment problem that we devote our lives to through ongoing learning and attention. Non-artificial learning towards values alignment involves a messy process that integrates shared ideas, personal real-world experiences, adaptiveness, and creativity, and learning from mistakes. Of course, it is no simple thing to program a sense of values and purpose into artificial intelligence. Most importantly, it is not currently very high on the agenda to figure out how to do this work, this alignment work and values at all when the big data approach dominates. We can and should debate how exactly our intelligence can lead us to more fully manifest empathy, morality, and justice, but clarity of purpose must be front and center in any attempt to expand the potential of artificial intelligence to help us get there. Thank you.